y'all ready to have a meeting? Let's have an AA meeting. My name is Melissa, and I am an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday 8 p.m. Blue Chip Speakers Meeting at the NAVA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our own personal story describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way that they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And so tonight, Ken will be introducing our speaker.
Morning, everybody. I'm Alcoholic Ken Horvat.
Hey,
had the honor of getting together with Sohel 38 years ago. We drank together, partied together, and got in trouble together. In 91, I was under so much heat that I decided that the only way that I could stop was to go ahead and make a wager. So I bet him $500 that I could stop drinking and smoking pot for a year. Didn't tell him I didn't quit everything. I just quit smoking pot and drinking. So I didn't handicap him, but he started drinking. I never collected my money. 10 years after that, he came into the rooms. Since then, and always will be, one of my best friends. He grabbed hold of it. He's a model of what a nice person can really be, because he's honest and open and willing to do whatever it takes to go ahead and stay sober. So with that, I give you Sohel.
Good evening. My name is Sohel. I'm an alcoholic. 21 years later, I joined. I called you. I said, I'm done. I was born in the Holy Land in Israel. I'm Palestinian Christian. I grew up on the Mediterranean Sea, first son for a bunch of uncles. My grandfather from my mother's side died when he was 47, an alcoholic, and left 9 kids, 3 months old, and my mother is the oldest one of all that. She was 16, I think. And I got spoiled by my uncles, my aunts, the first boy in the family. We lived about 100 yards apart, so they took care of me. I was chubby, beautiful, and all kinds of stuff. I don't know what happened. And my oldest uncle, his name Habib, he is one of us. He's an alcoholic. And he drank heavily. And he used to tell my father, said, I love your son and more than what you love your son about me. He gave me money every morning. And I looked at my Uncle Habib sitting and with his friends, and he's sending me to the grocery store to bring a bottle of scotch or something. And I just, because he'll give me the extra change and I'll buy ice cream or something. And then he let me taste the alcohol. I love the taste of alcohol since I was a little kid. I don't blame him for my alcoholism. Bless his soul. So, I grew up in a Catholic school. Was a good student. And my father decided, I was in 7th grade, going to 8th grade, to move to a village. Away from the sea, from the fishermen, from my life, all my friends, my uncles, to a village. There's nothing there but olive trees and a small soccer field. It was a disaster summer for me to go to 8th grade, from being close to a student to struggling. And then when I got to high school, I was an F student all across the board, from the top to the bottom. When I drank heavy. So when we have Eastern, we go to my uncle. They have alcohol on the table. Nobody says don't drink this and that. Nobody wasn't watching. I'll drink until I get sick to my stomach from the get-go. In the village, when we have weddings, the whole village gets invited, 3,000 people in the village. So literally, the Jeep with the microphone, there's a wedding at the Elias family. Everybody shows up, people bring with them gifts, alcohol, it's everywhere. And I got shit-faced literally almost every wedding. And I and that was every week. So I'll go home, and I will not go into my dad's house. I'll climb on the roof like a monkey, and I sleep on the roof. Because we didn't have air conditioning until many, many, many years later, I installed the air conditioning in my dad's house. That continued. I failed in ninth grade. My father was a vicious human being. He did not see why a straight A student, smart kid, that in sixth grade I used to do ninth grade mathematics, here I am getting an F in mathematics. So he, you know, slapped me around and said, you need to improve this. And then it goes for 3 months until the second report comes in, all written in red. I get slapped again. I get used to it. Flunk ninth grade, and I did it second time, did the 10th grade. 10th grade, the same thing, the same pattern. I was not good in languages. I was very weak, and I speak three languages, actually four, but three fluent. So I flunked in Arabic language, my native language, and English. And that's enough to fail the class. So I repeated 10th grade again. 10th grade, I wanted to come back to school. Get in my eyes, the Arabic teacher is named Gabby. Take him out. I'll be expelled for life, and that's all what I want to do. Thanks God, it didn't happen that way. One of the teachers came, talked to me, and I drank a couple of beers with him. My English teacher, actually, his name was in his house, and I bought a Marlboro. He knew I smoked Marlboro Red. Smoked a cigarette with him. He said, you're so smart, what you doing in your life? Either you quit, leave, but if you're here, do the deal. If you need anything, come to my house. I told him some of my dad's stories and the beatings I get and all that kind of stuff. I turned out to be a target student in that year. And then I ended up going to target math, physics, chemistry classes. Graduated from high school barely because the last year of high school, I did not go for almost 3 months. Had a fight with my father over something, and I continued my pattern with the weddings. The drinking weddings party, and any time we sit down in a party anywhere, I'll drink until I am no good. I did not want to continue in college. I have a scholarship to go to be a medical doctor. I did not go to piss my father off. I hated him so much that I want to do everything just to piss him off. All what he wanted me to study, 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 son of a gun. I don't want to study. I hate school. But I ended working as a welder. I learned from my father every summer I was working as a welder at the port, the shipyard, fixing troops and building them up. But they will not let me entry to continue to work at the port because Arabic Palestinian does not get these luxury things to work in the port. Security issues, stuff like that. I ended up going to nursing school. Believe it or not, I'm an RN. I went to nursing school for 3 years program. It was very hard to go to school. Since I was 14 years old, I did not take a dollar from my father. Done, deal, I don't need your help. I work in anything I can, downloading fish out of shipyards. I asphalted road, plumbing, concrete, not make a difference. I love my drinking. So in nursing school, I didn't have money. I did not drink because there's no money there, but when we have a party, I drink until everybody is drunk. I put them to sleep and I continue because I have tolerance for alcohol. Graduated, got a job 6 miles away from my father's house where I lived in that village. And that was the first time I go back to the village after 3 years in college. I worked in ICCU, trauma intensive care. After 4 months, I got fired because I'm dangerous to the Israeli government. Why? I never broken a law in my life. I drank. I never broken a law in any way or shape. So I found a job in different hospital. Before 1992, they fired me again. 82. The same thing, and they gave me a letter. I cannot work in any institute subsidized by the Israeli government. That's not politics. This is the truth. I have all these letters. I moved to Jerusalem. I worked in ICCU, heart intensive care. Same issues. They will not give me permanent residency. I always have a temporary job, I met a girl from Missouri. I was sick and tired of living there, inflation 400. I immigrated to the United States in 1984. I drank, but I focused on what I do. When I work, I never was late to my work, not once, except one time a girl changed the schedule as a nurse. And I ended going late to work because they called me and said, why are you not here? I said, I'm not working today. But no, said somebody, you see, somebody worked with seeing the schedule. I wake up every morning on time. All these years, I was never late on any of my meetings. But when I came to the States, to Missouri, Independence, Missouri, tried to pass the English exam, since I'm dumb in English back then, I failed. I needed 500 points. I scored 460. I could not do my state board exam English. Things happened between me and my ex-girlfriend. I left, came to Atlanta to visit a friend. I stayed in a house. The girl had lived there. Now the alcohol business stopped. She worked in a liquor store. And she has a table in her sunroom, as big as this one, full. With everything I could possibly like. So I got drunk every night, free, and I passed out on the couch, on the floor, wherever it is. And in the morning, she kicked me and said, get up, I have to go to work to make the coffee. Still today, I call her mom. She called me Yemma, and I call her Yemma. I love her. She's the most amazing human being. I moved out of her apartment. I met my wife sitting there, Vicky. In the process, I also worked for a guy in landscaping that has skin cancer. And I liked the happy hour. They used to gather in his house and we'd drink and drink and drink happy hour every day. It got to be a habit. And I liked the fact that I could drink. And the guy I worked for, not this young man with the cancer, another guy, promised me to have half of his business because I have a little bit brains of management, people. I used to be the head nurse of hospital. Intensive care, blah, blah, blah. So the guy lied to me. So I never thought about going back to nursing. I liked the fact I could drive my truck, smoke my weed, and have a 12-pack with me all day long. Hell with nursing. And I'm making, you know, money. So I started my own business, borrowed money to buy a lawnmower, but it actually is not far away from here, Taco Hill. And I bought a weed eater, and I have a new truck. Brand new truck, because they said, if I have to go to work for this guy, I need a brand new truck to make it to work. Responsible. I wrecked the truck first day I started my business. Not my fault. But it was my fault. Somebody slammed the brakes and a kid hit him. I was not drunk. And then I borrowed from my wife's mom, my mother too. She has an Oldsmobile Omega, I think. Put a lawnmower in the back, put a weed eater in the back, put the pines from the top, tie it down, and here we are back at work. And on the way home, I knew all the gas stations were at, and I knew each one where what I buy. So let's say on by Crab Apple, there's a gas station on the right. There was a beer can, the Foster Lager, the big guy, the oil can. The country store where Ken and I, where I left when we had the bet, he came and I'm sitting in the driveway drinking, that's where I bought my beer. I remember. So I built a business with the support of my wife. I told her from the get-go, if I make a mistake when I talk, correct me on the spot. And then also a lot of credit goes to Ken, my teacher, my friend, a brother, more than a brother. He taught me when I started the business. He taught me, a customer called me, said, "We need to landscape this." I said, "Yeah." I didn't know anything about landscape. I cut grass. So Ken has a landscaping company. We went, met with the customer. We go to the nursery and he will tell me this and that. That involved buying beers, driving 400 north. And in the way, we'll smoke a joint or two. And the relationship, even, you know, with Ken having back then drinking, but I think you're the nicest human being a friend could ask for. You helped me a lot to establish the language, to establish the way to talk to customers. And I bought the first house within 4 years in the United States without Vicky writing the invoices and showing me how to write the words, because my spelling until today is terrible. She helped me out. We have kids, four kids, three boys and one girl. Girl is the first one. Built the business, and the more money I made, the more drinking I did. Justified, I'm working hard. Made a lot of mistakes. Hurt a lot of people's feelings. And one person I cannot do enough amends in my life is my wife. She's dealing with the kids at home, and here I am at Longhorn Steak. There's a group used to be the Chattahoochee, the sons of the Chattahoochee. All of them divorced, all of them drunks. Most of them dead now. I'm the only one alive, or a few, couple of more still alive. So she is busy with two kids back to back, pregnant with the third one, and here I am sitting at the bar talking about the Falcons. Drunk, driving for many years. I drove drunk almost every day. Lucky, never got a DUI. I don't know if this is good or bad not to have a DUI. The loneliness of the move from a different culture to this culture is one of the hardest things I have to deal with. And the love of my family back home drove me into, I could call depression, and I treated that depression with drinking. So, and I thought all the time, I want to go back home. I don't want to live here. So we, in 97, we decided we're going back home. I have no plans, nothing strict plan, but said one way, take the kids, we work it out. 23 days later, we came back. I said, I cannot live with people that they don't want to sign papers with me on a business. After 2 years talking to a gentleman about a business there. Came back, 97, we bought a bigger house, and I thought, this is it, that's my life here. That's when my drinking escalated. To the point, I have a nice house, nice basement, big bar, and I started guzzling and breaking promises that I made to my wife. And when she called me a drunk or an alcoholic, that was a fight. So I broke many TVs in my house, many of them. If you've seen a coffee cup go through a TV, you know, TV is not going to stand that hit. I've done it many times. I have a box full of telephones. My kids used to make fun. Look at all these telephones that I broke. I broke seats in my truck. I lifted a Nissan truck when I was drunk one time off the ground. I hit people. One guy cussed me. I punched him. And I'm not a small guy. I don't think he'll ever forget it. But I was not a fighter in the bars. I never fought in the bars. But I think the more I drank, my personality changed. And the older I got, the worse things got. We got kids now. I was there for my kids. I coached them in soccer, all of them. I was there with them in every sport activities. My kids were rowing in the crew. I was the man in charge of towing the boats to Orlando, to Knoxville, you name it, Oak Ridge, Tennessee, Chattanooga, many places. I was responsible, never had a beer or a drink when I was towing $350,000 worth of boats behind me. But boy, when we get there and I park the truck, I go to a bar and here we go. And my son, one of the sons, the middle one, he broke his ACL. And then he stopped it on the oxy medicine. The doctors dragged him around for the MRI. I was overseas. VK called me and said, Gabe broke his leg. We need to do something with the MRI. I changed my flight, came in as fast as I can, called one of my clients, doctor. They did the MRI the next day. Within 15 days, the kid's sitting at home with a stretcher. They sent him, they ordered a stretcher for him to carry, to hold his knee instead of treating him. Cost us $2,200. They did the MRI and the kid is addicted to oxys. So, he's a very smart kid. After that, he started shooting heroin. We did not know about his heroin addiction until one day somebody called me and said, your son is in bad shape. So he came, we have to go through now my son's issue. Back and forth, Ken came to my house for intervention, and it did not work. And then the son tried to kill himself. I was standing there looking at him and said, kill yourself, I cannot help you. Call the police, put him in a program. Put him in a program, and at the beginning of my recovery, it was the hardest time. I'll go back a little bit. The hardest thing is to accept the fact I'm an alcoholic. Because when I called Ken, after all these things that happened, one of the things that happened, my other uncle is my favorite uncle, 68 years old. My brother called me, said, Uncle Hasib is sick. He's in the hospital, his liver stopped working. I said, is he, when he talks to you, go to sleep? He said, yes. The same day I flew overseas and I stayed next to my uncle, I was holding his hand when he died. That was very hard for me. The night my uncle died from his liver shut down alcoholic, I drank a lot, 1 liter of scotch with my brother and his friend. And my brother said, how much he drank? He said, no. So he drank a whole liter of scotch, and he doesn't even look that you have done anything. At that time, we already having problems at home, my wife and I. We arguing, fighting, and the neighbors, they get to know our, the police get to know our first name and last name because my son and me and everybody else. The fights and the chaos, living in a nice neighborhood, the chaos was amazing. So, I kept fighting the idea of I'm an alcoholic. And one thing I also did, I drank one time so much, forgot to drink water. I ended with the symptoms of a heart attack. And I called that. What I stopped by a customer's house. She was our very good friend. And she came out with her husband. They put me into the house, the ambulance came in, shipped me to St. Joseph. I'm 47 years old. My uncle died, my grandfather died 47, my other uncle almost died 47, and here I am, I'm on my way there with my St. Joseph Hospital. I stopped thinking about it. I quit drinking for 9 days, and after that I went back to the normal stuff. But when my son had all these issues. I have these issues. My uncle died. Our life is miserable, so we decided to go to counseling. When my wife used to go, we need to go to counseling. So what the counselor going to do? What do you think? They know more than me. And I have cuss words. They were bigger than this room. I cussed everybody. And we fought and argued over everything. If there's anything, here I'm coming with 6, 7 friends. Oh, cool. She's got 4 kids. She's got to do homework with them. She goes, nah, I don't care. Just just do it. So we went to counseling. First meeting at the counselor, we had a brand new Subaru. And we left that counselor, and I'm thinking about unhook the seatbelt and hit the wall so she'll fly out. I solved my problem with her. I don't know if I told you that, Vicky, or not. Okay. Thank God I didn't do it. So one Wednesday she met with the counselor. The next Wednesday I go to meet with the counselor. The next Wednesday we go together. Oh, boy. And I'm ready. If I had a gun, I would have killed her. And all of it because I'm not wrong. I'm not wrong. I'm right. She's wrong. And, you know, I'm 250 pounds. She's 110. She's wrong. So one of the last meetings I have with the counselor, it was on a Wednesday evening, and she said, after all these times together, there's nothing wrong in your family but your alcoholism and your drinking. You love your wife, she loves you. Everything is beautiful, you got successful. At that year I had 36 employees working for me, I have 14 trucks running in landscaping. I'm making it. My payroll was more than $1 million a year. And here we are, I'm struggling with this alcohol, and I told the counselor, as of today, is the last time I drank. And I meant it. I was sincere. And she said, you man, don't owe it. I said, a bunch of drunks and losers. She said, do you mind? I said, you know what? Because of you said that, I will. Who's an AA? My friend Kenny. I called him and said, Kenny, I hit bottom. He said, 8111, 6:15 in the morning, show up. I called the manager of the company and said, you're not going to see me any mornings anymore. I'm going to have to do something with my disease. I walked there and I sat, and my friend Kirk was sitting next to me on the other side, the same stair. And I did not say I'm an alcoholic. And Kenny pushed me, said, get a pickup white chip. I picked up a white chip from a very lovely person. I still remember the day, the moment, the second. And I relapsed. Later on, we went overseas to Prague. My sister got her PhD. I'm not the only smart guy at the house, you know. So she got her PhD. We were going somewhere in Florida, and my sister calls, I'm going to Prague to celebrate. I said, okay, we'll come and see you. We spent the whole week over there. I took with me my wine, knowing that I'm going to celebrate the PhD. Premeditated that I'm drinking. Even though I know that I should not do that, I drank in Prague, and I drank some wine while they have Christmas market and beers. In the airplane, I stopped drinking. Did not tell anybody about it. Even we sat in the airplane 6 hours. Was icing and this icing. And then a few months later, I flew to Israel. I used to fly to Israel every 6 months and spend a month over there for many years. I went over there at 3 a.m. in the morning. My brother ordered a beer and a party, and I drank it. And I drank with my priest. Went to his house. He invited me because I'm a good guy. And I drank with him. I said, I don't drink. No, I got to drink tonight. I hid that from everybody until one day we have a meeting on Wednesday about integrity. And the guy was saying that I was using while I'm telling you guys I'm sober, and it hit me. I admitted to my Wednesday group that I think it's one of the biggest reasons I stayed in this program, I'm sober. And I cried. I think that's the spiritual awakening. In that moment, I woke up. I cannot drink again, ever. And I cannot lie about my drinking. This is not a game that I want to play anymore. This is not I could pick and choose Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Sundays, no. And then I did my steps with Ken. I did not pick him as a sponsor. It happened to be that this is the only man I trust for all these years. He is my teacher. And he is doing so well. 21 years later, after our bed, we go and we sit down. And the minute I admitted that I'm an alcoholic, my life and unmanageable, you guys heard about it. But that thing come to believe that there's a power greater than ourselves or myself could restore me to sanity, he said, I don't believe in God. What God has to do with my alcoholism? And he said, the way he said it. And I took the book, hard to read English. So I kept digging and calling and Kenny is an act. He'll call me every day. How you doing? It's going to work out by the end of the day. Things are going to happen. Let it go. Let God. So what God has to do with it? The truck broke down. Just let it go. Let that pressure go. You have a new boss now. Remember that, Ken? Told me, I have a new boss. Doing the fourth step. All of them wrong. Everybody, from the Israeli government to my dad, to all these, everybody was wrong. Everybody, the list is this big. I never saw my part in it. It was very hard to see my part. But when I started thinking about it, and I saw my part, things have changed. Fast forward to now. Now it's, my sobriety date was August 24th, 2012. I relapsed, so my sobriety date is January 14th, 2013. So I've been sober 10 years. Will be in January, will be 11 years. It's one day at a time. It's not 10 years. It's every day. I work with others. I have sponsees. And when I am in a, don't know what to do, I know who to call. I got so many friends now. 99% of my friends is AA. Most of the people I talk to is AA. My wife and I took my wife to first Al-Anon meeting. When my son recovered from his addiction, we took him to a program. Every Thursday for 2 years, we went to Al-Anon meeting with the family, religiously. And then we kept going. I came here to, Ken told me, 6 meetings, Al-Anon. I came here with the table there. And I continued in the program. Working the program is the only thing I do. I don't miss my Wednesday meetings in the evening. That's where I met Mr. Tim Moore. I do the 6:15 every morning on the Zoom. I'm involved in the program. I hire people in recovery. I try. Sometimes it's not the best thing to do because who's going to hire a drunk? But the positive thing about it, if 1 out of 10 could really find a better life, or 1 out of 100. I have names of people that they have recovered. They have beautiful life, beautiful families. They call me, and one of them, she said, you're like a father to me. And my wife taught me this one, you are the father to the fatherless. I still have my business open for recovering addicts. I get hit by them. They stole my stuff. They hurt me. One guy died in our house, overdosed, one employee. We have few already, I don't know. One day we talked about putting their pictures in the office, but we have like 6 or 7 already died. It's their mistake. It's their problem. I recovered because I did the work. I'm still an alcoholic, and I cannot let go of my guard. I can't. My life today is beautiful. I'm grateful for all what I have to deal with between this and that and the other. Does not make a difference. I have tools. I have people to call. I don't fight with my wife over small stuff. We argue. We argued this Sunday over some stuff. I didn't hear what she said, and we argued. And, you know, and all of it was to put the rug down. At least we have a rug. But the thing is, it did not last forever. I will see when my part is. I pause and say, okay, I'm sorry. I didn't hear what you said. In the old days, something would have flown out. A chair, table, you know. I hear it a lot of times from our friends in the meeting. It says, the best days of our life are coming ahead of us if I stay in my sobriety. If I stay focused on one thing, my sobriety, my program. When my son and I, we had a fight, an argument about something, because he relapsed, and now, thanks God, he is in recovery program. He's been sober since May 4th, and he's in a program. He's doing great. They want to hire him as a counselor there. When I have issues with him, I did not go over and fight with him. I called a friend in the program. That I figured that man could help me. And I said, I need to sit down with you and do the fourth step. I met with one of the guys. We sat down for an hour for lunch. And then I did my fourth step and went to my son with my fourth step. And I said, that's what you need to do. The next day, things worked out too much better. And then he called me back and said, I love you, Dad. I'm ready to go. He could not walk from his house down, but he is walking tall today sober. And he told me when he did that, I mean, said, Dad, if you were not sober and changed who you are, I would have not followed you. So sobriety is working in my life because they see who I am. A lot of the guys that work for me for 25 and some years, they know the old Sohail, they know the new Sohail. I am so grateful to be here, to be able to tell you guys my story, and I'm so grateful for what AA have given me in your life. Thank you for letting me share my story with you guys.
Thank you once again for sharing your story.
Just another homesick child, tired of running wild, ready to stand trial and move on. Though I'm guilty in your sight, have some mercy tonight. I can't make it through this fight all alone. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Until I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. As I try to make some sense of this world I'm up against, well, I know my best defense is your love. When the struggle gets insane and the lessons full of pain, keep it calling out your name with love. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt. From the bottom of my heart, and I'm searching for one star to shine. I will shout from mountain high, and I'll reach into the sky, till you open up my eyes so blind. But oh Lord, don't make it easy. Keep me working till I work it on out. But please, please, won't you shine enough light on me till I'm free from the shadow of doubt. Keep me out of the shadow of doubt.